This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora te whanau. Welcome everybody to the AA Live Radio Show. It is so lovely to be here tonight. This is the show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. And I am lucky enough to have Sue with me here tonight. Welcome, Sue.
Hello.
How are you?
You're really good. Really good. I've just been in Auckland for a week.
Lovely.
That was good.
Was the weather better?
Yeah, it was nice. A lot better than down here. But it's lovely to be back, that's for sure.
Tell me, I used to live in Auckland. Did it rain every day?
Only a couple of times.
Afternoon rain. It's the only place I've lived in New Zealand where I took an umbrella to work every day, knowing that it wasn't going to be blowing inside out, but I may actually get to use it.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
But it was really, really great and really great to see family and friends, that's for sure.
You're looking well. In fact, you look like you've taken 5 years off. Did you go up and get some injections? I kid. Hey, a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fellowship of alcoholics in recovery. We help each other through our journeys of sobriety. There are no paid positions. It is operated purely on volunteering our time. And I mention that because recently we spoke with the medical students at the university, and a lot of people think that this is an organisation that has a general manager and a CEO and all those sorts of things, but it isn't. It's purely run by alcoholics. We support each other because we quickly learn that we all have the same disease, alcoholism, and that when we pick up a drink, one drink is too many and 1,000 is not enough. So the insatiable craving takes over and takes us places in the end that we don't want to be. Would that be about a good summation?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not right. So we work a 12-step program, and for those that aren't sure what that involves, keep listening as we'll be reading the 12 steps out during the show today. So let's kick us off, Sue.
Right, so I'm going to read the AA preamble, which is always read out usually at the beginning of each meeting. So here we go. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
That is so what we do. And it's such an individual program, don't you think? We do.
How you customise it, you mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But with while maintaining that sort of key infrastructure and having those steps. But when I first got into AA, and I might have said this before on the radio on this program, is that, you know, it was so urgent for me that I did make it my primary purpose. And I even put it in front of my job and everything. I had to calibrate or shuffle other things to make sure that I'd could attend meetings as much as possible and take on the advice and listen to what was in the room. So, yeah, if you're first starting on this program, you know, it really does need to be at the forefront of your initial sort of giving up drinking and your initial few weeks and months of sobriety.
I have to agree. I was the same. I started out going to one or two meetings and saying, I remember at my first meeting saying, I don't know how I'm going to get back here. I've got so much to do in life.
I'm so busy.
I'm so busy. And how am I going to organise my child? And but very quickly I learnt that it was necessary to change my whole schedule and make these priority, my meeting, going to meetings priority. But also I found the peace that I got in that 1 hour meeting so valuable,
right,
that just that stopping and being able to listen to like-minded people who everybody's really different. You know, we have such a wide range of types of people, right? But when we go into those meetings, we talk about the same thing. And what I mean by that is our experiences. It doesn't matter where we've come from. Somewhere you hear the similarity.
And you can identify with some of the features or not, you know, and then and that, so you can ponder that in a meeting. And I was just up in Auckland, I went to a few meetings, and it's pretty cool, right? You know, you can look at the app or whatever, and you can sort of roll up to different meetings. And on Saturday morning, I thought, when I first got there, I thought, right, should I just go grab a coffee with some friends or whatever I'm going to do? I'm like, wait a minute, it's 8:30 in the morning. And there was one in Grey Lynn, and it's always one of my favourite ones up there. And so that was really
how
good
fabulous
way to set up. And then I headed to the Pollen Street ones because they're really close to where I was staying. And again, they have about three on a day, so no shortage of getting to those places. And, yeah, just being able to have that familiarity and support and
And it is always welcoming when you walk into a room too, isn't it, if you've come from somewhere else.
Yeah, and it's just the variety of population there. It
would have been so nice. Mm. Yeah, having all those different types of meetings. Well, I'm a little bit envious. I'm a little bit envious, Sue. Hey, each day we do a daily reflection that I'm going to read, but I do want to just let you know, listeners, that what you hear today, they're our opinions. It's just two Alcoholics in Recovery having a chat. So they're not the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So let's start with this daily reflection, which we had a little bit of a talk about beforehand, and we'll have a bit more of a discussion after I've read it. So it's called My Checklist, Not Yours. Gossip barbed with anger, a polite form of murder by character assassination, has its satisfactions for us too. Here we are not trying to help those we criticise. We are trying to proclaim our own righteousness. And that comes from one of our books, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. It's on page 67. Sometimes I don't realise that I gossiped about someone until the end of the day, when I take an inventory of the day's activities. And then my gossiping appears like a blemish in my beautiful day. How could I have said something like that? Gossip shows its ugly head during a coffee break or lunch with business associates, or I may gossip during the evening when I'm tired from the day's activities and feel justified in bolstering my ego at the expense of someone else. Character defects like gossip sneak into my life when I am not making a constant effort to work the 12 steps of recovery. I need to remind myself that my uniqueness is the blessing of my being, and that applies equally to everyone who crosses my path in life's journey. Today, the only inventory I need to take is my own. I'll leave judgment of others to the final judge. Ooh, divine providence. Ooh, that's a bit frightening. But we were talking earlier about that reading and how, you know, it's meaning to us, and we both sort of came up with different aspects of it, didn't we? Yeah, it was quite interesting, really, because this is the individuality of the program, isn't it? This is why I learn something new every time I sit down with another alcoholic about how other people can see the world and so forth. And one of the things we were talking about was something that's recently happened in Alcoholics Anonymous around us, involving a couple of people in the rooms. And we were talking about this situation. And I think our discussion was more about the caring about somebody and then the unwellness of somebody whose actions had, you know, who had taken some actions. And it's quite interesting to take note of those things. But then it's not about bagging the people. It's about identifying, I think. So when I talk about other people in the rooms, if someone mentions them, I'm trying to identify where they're at and how it's going. Whereas I also had an example the other day where somebody stood with me and went, oh, yeah, but what about, and blah, blah, blah. And I actually had to shut them down. Mm. It was a whole different avenue of talking about this person. And, yeah, it is interesting. I didn't really have many people to gossip about before I came into the rooms because I was drinking on my own.
Well, I see. So you're isolated.
I was isolated. Yeah. So that catching up with people and going, ah, blah, 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 about someone wasn't happening. What about you?
Yeah, I think on a personal level, I've learnt over many years, you know, gossip is sort of a – gossip is not – sorry about that, coming closer to the microphone – it's not really my wheelhouse in some ways. I mean, I've been heavily critical. I mean, I do still love it, like in a queer setting, you know, you really go hyper, you know, like it's between each other and it's just fun and camp and all that kind of thing. But it's not usually it's a detriment to someone, detrimental. So that's more of a cultural sort of slaying in a way. But, you know, that's kind of fun. But if you bring it back into gossiping at someone's sort of expense, it's never been something I would really get into because I've sort of figured that it's not pleasant, and it's usually just demonstrates insecurities of another person, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it's the same. Yeah, I've never really been a gossipy person, but yeah. It's an interesting one. It's certainly one to go away and ponder about, that's for sure. And I think that's one of the nice things about those daily reflections is there may be something you hear and you go, ooh, now there's something to think about, or there's something I need to identify about myself, or that's not me at all.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And that's the nice thing, I think, about those daily reflections. Some days they'll make me think, and other days I'll be, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So with, I guess, yeah, and also with gossiping, you know, what's the effect of that? And do you need to get involved in those types of discussions and that type of thinking and holding? And so, yeah, holding back, not could have been involved in that could be a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, stand back. What's there's a saying not my monkeys, not my circus. I've heard that from someone in the rooms a little bit. I always think, yeah, no, okay, I can understand that. You are listening to the AA Live show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. And we are going to play a little bit of music. I got into some music on the weekend and because Ice House is coming to play here. So I found out an old CD of mine and I went, yes, please, we'll have a bit of that. Thank you very much. So here's Ice House, My Obsession.
Let's
I love a bit of Ice House. I remember grooving to them way, way, way ago. Anyway, I think we might have some steps. What do you reckon, Sue?
Sounds good. I've got them right here. Are we ready to rock?
We're ready to rock.
So what I'm going to do now is read out the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm getting my tongues all tied up here. So let's go. So step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to make personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And finally, number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Wow. I remember when I first heard those. And I didn't really hear them. All I heard was God, God, God. And
being
thinking,
being willing.
Didn't take me too long, though, to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I was in such a desperate place that I was ready for that. Yeah, my life had become unmanageable. So that one I sort of understood. I think my first meeting was a really good meeting. There was people who shared on step one and I related to several of them.
Yeah, so. Because now you realise, they're actually, they recalibrate, so I've said that word already, the meeting, if there's someone new that's in their first one or two meetings.
Yeah, and you don't realise
that. You don't realise.
Yeah, that they're purposely talking about what it was like for them.
So just to get to one, because I can remember looking at number 4 and 9, and I'm like, oh my, you know, how do I even get to there?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, the first step, and I still do that step most days, every day, if I'm walking to work, and I separate them out. It's two parts, right? There's unmanageability, and then your sort of relationship to alcohol and drinking.
Exactly. And,
yeah, you break that down.
For me, that all became so obvious in when I did step 4. You know, step 1, writing my story, and then step 4, and you just sort of, I don't know, I found myself, like a good alcoholic, I wanted to jump through every step and every hoop really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And that saying, keep it in the day, just for today, really had to be something I said to myself a lot, because I would jump. I was such an organizer. I would jump, you know, 5 days ahead, 2 months, 2 years, all of a sudden, and I'd be panicking. Mm. So I really had to teach myself to live in the day when it came to the steps. That was just one of my things, because I would jump ahead and go, oh, but what about? Now I'm got so laid back with them. I probably, I figure, you know, it's.
And there's some really great. I think they're experts on the book, and the big book, and they always say, and when they share, you know, it's this plan of the plan of action. You know, there's certain steps. It's about the doing, and it's so true.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's really helpful. And I was going to talk about right now. I've just in Auckland. I'm at step 9.
And nice.
And so I undertook a couple of amends. And so that's about making direct amends to the people you've harmed. And one was a family member, and then one was like a very similar to a family member, like my younger brother. But I've known him for like, I don't know, 30 years, 28 years. And it wasn't about everything. It was about a specific couple of years, you know. In a specific time. So what I did is I could curate it into an actual moment. So I wasn't apologising for all of who I was, because that's not, because we've had beautiful times, great times, but it was just like in the last phase, if you like, of my progressive alcoholism. And, you know, it was just ravaging me, and I just couldn't control it. And it was, and the effect on my family was really devastating. In a way, and so it was so important that I just followed the steps, and I talked with my sponsor. And what I did was I set it up about 3 or 4 weeks before I went to Auckland to approach them, so they could set aside that time. And what my sister did was she kind of minimized it, and it says in the big book, like, watch out, you know, people are going to go, hey, it doesn't really matter, you know, that was a long time ago, where you knew you were in a bad place, or that wasn't really you, it was the alcohol. And so to actually sit there and own up and to really talk it through. And the conversation just extended beyond what I thought it was, you know, and it was just so cool in a way. And I know they don't always go like that, and I don't expect some of them to go like that, but it really was, it was everything that I was sort of, how do I explain it? It was, you know, when you're saying sorry, and how did I damage you? You know, what did I, tell me what your experience was. And they really do tell you.
Yeah, they do.
But not like a hard out. It's just like they really thought about it, because they know that you're coming to see them, or you're going to go somewhere special for a few hours. And so they're ready.
Absolutely. And that's all part of the step. And the interesting thing is, we, when we first come into the rooms, we look at those steps and we go, how can I possibly do that? Mm. And we don't even have all the information that we're actually not doing it on our own. We have a sponsor that helps guide us to which way to do it and how to do it. And exactly as you said, you know, you can organise a time to catch up and have that conversation with the person and how to help get the best out of it rather than just sitting there going, oh, I'm really sorry I did this.
Sorry,
it's,
back the car into the fence or something kind of quite minimal compared to actual the emotional harm.
It's the emotional harm that we talk about. Exactly. Yeah. I had that with my first, when I did an amends with my best friend and she was like, oh, no. And I was like, no, I need you to just stop and just listen and tell me. How did I make you feel? Because I need to hear it and then I need to apologise for it. It was really more in depth than anything I've ever done before, you know, when apologies. It's very interesting. And you don't just learn about yourself, you learn about them as well. It's a very, if it's a kind, loving, it can be a really intensely kind, loving moment and emotional moment. Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I've also made amends to people who have said, yeah, right, thanks. And then that's it. They don't want to know anything more. But that's okay because that friendship was already over. But it was necessary to go back and.
Yeah. But to be quite specific about an example or time is really helpful because that sort of gives you like a place or a circumstance. And then that locates the conversation, and then they can, and then once that's sort of going, then you know other things come about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a real deep dive and a delve. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that you were exhausted, and I so understand that.
Yeah, we started at 1 a.m, and you know, and then we decided to go out for you know make dinner and lunch because I was staying with them, and then it's you know a whole day, but not say you know you're not on your knees saying sorry that you're having a great time.
Yeah.
But you sort of learn about the effects of your alcoholism on someone else, and then you realise that you know their brother is actually also heavily afflicted in a way, and so it was from both sides, you know, and that sort of how to. Work on that, I guess. Understand that it's not just about your actions; it's about what was that person going through at that same time too.
Well, it's such a selfish disease too. We busily run around and do what works for us, but we don't think about the results of our actions and what's happening in their lives. It's all about what's in it for me or what I'm doing at the moment. Or it's amazing how.
Yeah.
How this program teaches you to look outside of yourself. And it creates, I think this program has created some really intensely closer relationships through amends.
Right, yeah. And as you said, sometimes, you know, you hope that they'll go well. And that, sure, it reinforces that connection. And sometimes it
doesn't.
You know, it can be acknowledged. And financial amends too. You know, there's ones that are like to institutions or people.
I've had a few of those with people and, one person, I was really trying to pay this person back some money. They just chopped me off. They just didn't want to know. They'd had the amends, that was it, and that was enough for them. But it took me a little bit to get to I'm still not necessarily comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Because I'm aware it's there. But, yeah, it's I have to respect their decisions and their actions and how they've gone about it. So, yeah, that's just something.
Yeah, and one of the comments at the end of when you say, you know, what can I do, not reparation, I guess, or what can I do? And then he said, it's just great to have you back. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you're here, you know, you're present, you're sort of engaged, you're, you know, that's what you can do.
It's true. You have like a sparkle in your eyes. I mean, literally, I mean it when I said to you earlier, you're looking great. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's I can see you're comfortable in who you're becoming and who you are. And I don't know about you, but when I first came in, I didn't think I was worthy of very much at all. I didn't.
It's there different for everybody, eh? Because you're still here, and it's really important to understand that not everyone can click over or click into it. And, you know, you hear some of our dear friends in AA, and they said they didn't even talk for 12 months. Or they didn't even know what was going on for like 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's not this hey, you know, we're going to have this exponentially cracker of a time. It's really different for each person.
Absolutely, and that's it. There's so many different individuals, and we start, I think part of the recovery is actually seeing that people are individuals, because we've been so self-centered on ourselves without realizing it. But in saying that, I used to give the shirt off my back to the people I cared for, but there was always a condition on it,
right?
Without realizing, you know. So, it's a really interesting learning journey, because we've all gone about it. We're all doing the same thing, and that's picking up and drinking, right, to oblivion of some description. But we're all seeing it differently. Because we've all had different life experiences.
Yeah.
Who's given us love, who hasn't, all of those sorts of things. So, yeah, we all, the world doesn't all run along doing the same thing in the program, that's for sure. We all come about it with something different, some different personal grievance or pain or, I don't know, abandonment, I hear, seems to be a huge one.
That's a big one, isn't it?
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's really fascinating, because we learn more about other people and take it into consideration, which is personal growth.
And there's you're right, there's abandonment. And there's a lot of pain.
A lot of pain.
And it's very subtle and soft at times, and other times it sort of is right on people's sleeve. And that's when you are at meetings, and sometimes, you know, it's just listening, and that person might be going something for a whole month. You know, it can be almost a similar pattern. But then slowly it sort of eases, or something else happens, and then focus might go on to someone else, you know. But, yeah, it's sort of a live action, you know. Well, how do I say that? It's been...
It's organic.
Organic at the same time. But, yeah, the pain is intense, of people's lives and being so self-critical of themselves.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the ruin. I'm laughing now. I shouldn't laugh, but I've just had a flashback to some of the things, you know, that I got into, and now it's having that distance, and it's not, I shouldn't laugh. But
you have to laugh.
Believe some of the, you know.
You can't regret the past, remember? You can't forget it. You can't regret it. You just got to learn from it. And that's what going forward is always about.
Yeah, and I just... You know, when you have those flashbacks, and you can almost remember the room that you're in, the footpath or whatever it is, and, you know, driving around, just trying to hide, and, just some of the calamities.
I hate to tell you, Sue, they'll get bigger as time goes on. Like, yeah. I remember more and more and more as time goes on. Things that just pop in, and they pop in at the weirdest times. Mm. Yeah, something might be happening, and I'll think, oh my gosh. And I'd completely forgotten about it. So that's when I know my brain is starting to recover, and it's coming back, and it's starting to tick again. And there's
the synapses.
They're all clicking in, starting to connect. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Thank you.
Because when you're drinking or other substances, and, you know, you have these instant hits of dopamine, you know, it's huge, right? That's why you have to keep drinking in a way, or keep going out or partying or whatever. And so having to replace that gradually with other types of enjoyment, and you can get to those places again. Sure, they're different from other sort of phases, but my gosh, you know, I was just sick of myself by the end of it, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, I so relate to that. But this is the thing, you mentioned instant gratification, and that's what we all look for, and that goes with alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, all those things that give us an instant dopamine thing. And so this recovery isn't just about drinking. It's looking at every aspect of our lives, and you find that there's one or two things that you had that you did, maybe three, maybe four. But they are on the peripherals as well, because that's what we like. Instant gratification. please. I'm so glad that I don't live like that anymore. Yeah, it's such a different life.
Smoother and more consistent.
Oh my gosh, life is so consistent and so much more relaxed and poor. Yeah,
but still, there's peaks and the troughs, right?
Absolutely. You know, look, there are things that dynamics. Happen, and I go, oh, and it's hard to look at them sometimes. But what I do find now is that I take everything on the chin and just work through it. And it's okay to feel terrible and have a hard time. It's more about how I process it all and how I go through it. Because previously, when anything was difficult, I would pick up. Do you know, we're just going back to those steps, the interesting thing that I found that not everybody quite realises, that 10, 11 and 12, we pretty much start doing those early on in recovery. Mm-hmm. As soon as you've gone through that 1, 2 and 3 type thing, then you're ready and you're already doing those, starting to put those things into action. And then there's the middle chunk, right? But lots of people don't realise that they're doing it. It's almost a backwards.
Yeah, it's sort of constantly cycling through, isn't it?
Yeah. If you're looking at yourself and reassessing your life and doing all of those things, then yeah, 10, 11 and 12 are happening on a daily basis. And people go, oh, I want to get to the end. It's like, you've already hit the end. You've already started.
You don't stop there too. As I was saying, I was in the rooms in Grey Lynn, and this woman had turned 28 years of sobriety.
Wow.
And she was really cool. And she's, you know, she was saying, I really don't like sharing. You know, it was classic. But I will. And then she just had this brilliant share. And she was sitting, because there's so many people in the room, our knees were sort of almost touching, you know, you were crammed in. And, so she was saying she's probably, I don't know, cycling through. She's doing the steps again. You know, she's back on number 8.
Yeah, well, you never
and
stop doing
28
them.
Years. And she's like, you know, still, you change. You're not the same person when you come in, surely, 28 years later. And
well, the thing is, too, once you start sponsoring, you do them again with your sponsees. Mm-hmm. You can do them a couple of times a year if you want. You do them as many times as you like. Some people do them once and never again. But you'll notice those people. You'll see how they talk. And it's a good thing to look at yourself all the time and rebuild. Well, not rebuild, but, you know, take an inventory and go, okay, I could probably do with some work, because there is no such thing as perfection. We're just people trying to live life. It's not easy. And then you have that thing on your shoulder that says, "Oh, yeah, have a drink, it'll help." And it's like, no, go away. I need some help to not listen to that little blimmin' voice. But, yeah, I think I'm quite lucky. I don't have the want to drink anymore. But some people have that for a long time. It goes back to that. Everybody's different.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about before, eh? There's people that just try so hard to, cut down or stop drinking. And it's just, yeah. They had several attempts and,
Well, several attempts. I always say, if I had found the rooms earlier, I would have been in and out, in and out, in and out for a long time. Because, I've certainly had my times without AA, that trying to give up drinking, and always ended up going back. This is the first thing that's made me stop comfortably. Mm-hmm. It's the first thing ever. So many times trying for myself. It's difficult. It's challenging. It's really challenging. Right, we've gabbled on. We're going to put some music on. Let's have a listen. Now, I was listening to a CD the other day that my son and I had. It's the Imagine Dragons Mercury. And we'd got into CD 2, but we'd never really picked up CD 1. And I picked it up and lo and behold, I didn't realise there are several recovery songs in there. I was really surprised. So I'm going to play a little bit of Imagine Dragons now, although come to think of it, I'm not sure this is a recovery song, but it was just one that I was enjoying in the kitchen, which I do.
I wake up to the sounds of the silence that allows for my mind to run around with my ear up to the ground. I'm searching to behold the stories that I told when my back is to the world that was smiling when I turned. My phone and the laughter in the holes and the names that I've been called. I stack it in my mind and I'm waiting for the time when I show you what it's like to be worse fit in the mind. Tell you you're the greatest, but once you turn, they hate us. Oh, the misery. Everybody wants to be my enemy.
Okay, I'm hoping that somebody pray for me. I'm praying that somebody hope for me. I'm staying where nobody supposed to be. Posted, being a wreck of emotions. Ready to go whenever you let me know. The road is long, so put the pedal into the flow. The energy on my trail, my energy unavailable. I'ma tell it my silhouette go. Ain't wanna fly on my drive to the top. I've been out of shape, taking out the box. I'm an astronaut. I blasted off the planet, rock that caused catastrophe. And it matters more because I had it. Now I had a thought about wreaking havoc on an opposition. Kinda shocking, they want a static with precision. I'm automatic, quarterback, I ain't talking second. Pack it up, I don't panic. Batter up, who the baddest? It don't matter, cause we is your
thing. Everybody wants to be my enemy.
What'd you think of that? That was a bit full on. Hey, folks, I wanted to read an extract from the aa.org.nz website. And this is somebody's story. I thought you might like this. It's called One Day at a Time. At 32 years old, when I came to AA, I was desperate, suffering from a disease that I didn't really know about or understand. I didn't think I could ever give away the alcohol. It was progressively my world for about 20 years. Then the good times got fewer until there were absolutely none. I was heavily involved in sport during my teenage years and early 20s, which slowly and insidiously went as I drank more. I became a spectator, critic, and someone I despised in earlier years, known as a barfly. I was hopelessly alcoholic, but still kept drinking, experiencing DTs and shakes. Alcohol dictated where I lived, where I went, who I hung out with, when I would turn up for work, if I did. And then came unemployment because employers or firms didn't want to hire an unreliable drunk that used all his sick days and more. Loss of driver's license, 2 bouts of alcoholic hepatitis and nights in local police cells, broken relationships and relocations, the list goes on. I used all sorts of excuses to justify my drinking, why I was late for work or why I didn't turn up at all, why I didn't turn up for meals or family gatherings unless drunk, why I couldn't keep a simple promise, etc., etc. Then I thought I never hurt anyone except myself, and boy, how wrong I was. I stole time from my employers or only worked at 25% of that due to being hungover or still drunk or they couldn't rely on me to turn up. I stole my parents' hopes and dreams as well as their peace of mind because I couldn't be honest as long as I was still drinking. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, really desperate and out of answers, the most honest thing I had admitted in years was, I'm Kevin and I'm an alcoholic. I heard it said by a member of AA early in my sobriety that honesty is a bit like being pregnant. You can't be half pregnant. It's rather ironic that now, when I want to tell the odd fib, that guy with that saying always comes to my mind and my conscience kicks in. I have to do the right thing or suffer the consequences. And to be honest, I usually do the right thing or find myself making amends. Desperation got me to AA. And gratitude is now keeping me here because I am experiencing a lot of the promises that were written of in the big book. And because this is a practical plan of action, both inside and outside of AA. I know if this didn't work, I would not keep going to AA. But the proof is in my life today. I can function one day at a time without drinking, all because of taking and working the steps under the direction of a good sponsor. It took me a while for me to get honest and surrender, but I have hung around long enough for the miracle of AA to work. I don't do this program perfectly and never will. I just try to do it to the best of my ability. Sometimes I fall short and other times I do all right. What I've learnt from experience is to just put one foot in front of the other, through good times and bad. And if I'm having problems, I pray to my higher power for the willingness to do the next right thing. That could be to ring my sponsor, get to a meeting, help another alcoholic, read the big book, or follow another recovering alcoholic's example. Also, it's been my experience that if I place my sobriety first, everything else falls into place.
Nice work.
Yeah, it's a lovely story, isn't it? Thank you, Kevin. I think that was really important to hear. I don't know how often you jump on that aa.org.nz website, but it's got a lot of good things in it, a lot of information, and a lot of places to go to question whether you should or, you know, whether you could give Alcoholics Anonymous a go or give it a try or at least come to one meeting.
And what I like about that story is that the person is like 32 years old and already is quite a heavy patterning going on in terms of how the story rolls out. And so you can really identify with that as well. Yeah, especially around employment and unemployment.
Well, this is it, isn't it? It just depends. And that may be your experience. So that's the thing, isn't it? Everybody's so different.
Yeah.
I like it. You are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. Now, if you would like to listen to some of our past shows, I've got to put in a plug to check out ORFM's, that's O-A-R-FM's website, and look for the AA Live podcasts. There's lots of them there. So well worth the listen, well worth the listen. And I've got to tell you, folks, for me, well worth the adventure into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm incredibly grateful alcoholic, and one thing I hear all the time in the rooms is a grateful alcoholic will never pick up. Oh, geez, I look for that gratitude. What about yourself, Sue?
That's exactly right. Being conscious of the fact that you have to admit, you know, you've surrendered that I'm an alcoholic. I can't control how I drink. I can't control myself with alcohol, and the way I have been drinking is, you know, ruining everything. And I sort of go into that, really. Yeah, and it freaks me out. It scares me. So I think at the moment I'm like, I'm terrified, you know, like I'm not going to pick up. Why am I laughing? But I think it's just, it's not so much laughing. It's just more like, yeah, it's frightening.
Yeah, I have a healthy fear.
Is that what they call it?
It's a healthy fear of picking up. Mm. Yeah, I see people who have picked up and they come back into the rooms and I go, thank you, I'm so grateful you came back in, so that I can hear what will happen. Yeah. It reminds me all the time of what could happen if I pick up.
Yeah, and I think we've got time to keep going a little bit longer. And for me, it was like, you know, I spent, 40 years drinking pretty, and at times really heavily. And so now that I don't drink, or I don't need to drink, like, it's a whole new game that's going on. Like, it's just like, wow, this day is really weird. It's like quite cool. It's like a new landscape and it's got a whole bunch of things going on. I'm like, hey, this is actually quite fun. You know, this is really enjoyable. This is something I haven't experienced before. So that's really helpful. It's not like I don't have any idea if I'm not missing out anymore. I've got no FOMO. You know, I've done it. I've kept it. You know, I couldn't do it much more, really. And so, like, and that's helpful. It's not like I am in my 20s or that we're like, oh, just, you know, maybe I can just stop for a couple of years and then I can, you know, manage it. For me, it's just like, absolutely not. Yeah.
Well, I in that way, think
so.
The same.
And then it's quite exciting what's happening. And, yeah, it's never too late.
It's never too late. And I agree with you. I was the same from 14 to 49. I drank. Yeah, there was a few years in there that were not a lot of alcohol. But I remember when I was 20, it was fun. It's such a progressive illness. Well, okay, let me re-say that. I thought it was fun and everybody else was doing the same thing as me because those were the people I hung out with, the people that drank like me. But really, going home and sleeping for a few hours and going back to work drunk is not a normal thing, but I felt that it was. Yeah. You know, having a bicycle so I didn't have to get in a car. And, you know, sometimes I drove down those pathways. I've had some terrible accidents on my bicycle, some horrible injuries, just so I wasn't on the road drinking and driving. That's actually not normal, but I thought it was pretty clever and well thought out. that's not the way it is at all. Mm. It's never too late. I didn't tell you while you were away, we had somebody reach 60 years in the rooms. We celebrated 60 years, 60 people, you know, and that's
you're still going to meetings.
Still going to meetings because, and that is one of those things you learn. You just never stop. He has progressed to one meeting a week for a long time, but that's how it works. You just, it's free. Go and hang out with your people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, party of people. Okay, I want to remind you out there, folks, that if you want to drink, that is your business. If you want to stop, well, that's what we do. So if you want to find out about a meeting, jump on the website, aa.org.nz, or even give us a call and have a chat about it. We've got a phone line, which is 0800 AA Works, and that is 0800 229 6757. You'll get another alcoholic on the end of the phones. That's how that works, as I sang at the beginning, volunteers. We're going to finish with a song this evening. Sue and I have had a good chat about some music today, so hopefully we'll bring some different stuff in next month. I hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed tonight's show. I'd like to thank you, Sue, for sharing and coming in and spending the evening with me. It's
really
been great. It's really wonderful. I'm really enjoying watching your recovery too.
Not a zoo animal.
No, you're not. Hey, everybody, wonderful to have you out there tonight. Take care. Mati wai, everyone. We're finishing with a bit of Fatboy Slim.
right now, right here, right now, right here, right now.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.